Welcome, listeners, to a brand new bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. And today we have with us a full writer, and also she does lots of other things, which we'll find out about. So please welcome Carlene Griffith, everybody, to the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I'm very glad to have you, and I'm excited to speak with you. Originally, and this is for everyone to take note on, okay, so I'd already met Carlene, but my attention was drawn to the stuff that Carlene does when she sent me a blog post in which she highlighted Oh My Word Podcast. So everyone be like Carlene and highlight Oh My Word Podcast.
Well, it was so good. I just had to.
So Carlene's a writer, and she also has founded the Griffith Playhouse, which we'll find out about. What does that mean, Playhouse? How do we go about doing such things? Let's start, well, somewhere that's kind of the beginning of how did we get to this point of you've got some books out, you got some plays out. You know, how did you even, is this something that you always wanted to do? How did you even get here?
Well, it's kind of a long, I started teaching. I was a freelance acting teacher, kind of like from the beginning of my marriage, because before I was married, I was pursuing an acting career, but then I was like, okay, I want to get married and settle down. And then, but I still had that bug, like, I just want to perform, you know? And so then I started teaching acting classes, kind of like on a freelance basis. And as I was doing it, I was finding that I just loved it. It just developed from like a hobby to just really wanting to do it professionally. And so when I started making money at it, I was like, well, my family came first. So I had to kind of like back off a little bit on that. But then as soon as right after my second child was born, I started working at a theater company called Christian Arts and Theater, and I became their educational advisor, and I started teaching at the same time, and I didn't want to pay royalties or like licensing fees to do like the little skits and the performances for the parents, and so I started writing my own little plays.
Oh.
And before I knew it, I had like dozens of like little plays that I'd written, and I just enjoyed it so much that I just kept writing and kept writing. Next thing I know, like I'm writing fairy tales, and I was going to self-publish that. And then when I went to do that, I realized how easy it was to self-publish on my own because I had gone with a company for my Rosemaid Elaiden series. And then I started doing it on my own. Before you know it, I'm like publishing these compilation books with my short plays on it. And that's how 10-minute plays came to be. But like the Griffith Playhouse was just like the beginning of all of it. It was like my son needed something to do and I wanted to continue to teach acting, but like I couldn't really do it and have children and work and do it all. You know, it was just too much for me. So I started teaching during the summer outside of my house. And I actually was looking into doing like a daycare thing during the summer, just kind of like to keep my son occupied and have his friends over, because I knew there were a lot of parents that had children that didn't have any place to go. And so I thought, well, I'll have him at my house and then maybe I'll do a daycare and make some extra money. But then I realized I don't have a license for daycare. You know, you have to have all these like permits and everything.
Yes.
But there's a loophole. Like if you teach a class, if it's focused and it's more like a club type of thing, then you don't have to have that special licensing. Well, I had gotten the Griffith Playhouse business license because I had wanted to continue teaching. And then, so I started doing it on my house. And before I know it, I'm teaching like little kinder theater classes. I'm teaching teenage acting classes. I'm just teaching all these other classes. And so it just kind of grew, you know?
Wow.
And then I got a contract with the city, and then I started teaching out of their community center, and that's kind of how Griffith Playhouse started. So it was all just the classes, and then as I was writing all these stories and all these little plays, then the publishing aspect came out of it, and then that's how I became who I am today.
Oh, wow. So was your schooling acting-oriented? Like when you went to school, you were doing drama and acting and stuff like that, or was something totally different and you fell into acting afterward?
I started performing when I was 4 and a half, and I started taking dance classes, and I did like community theater, and like I had been performing since I was walking.
Yeah.
I just have always enjoyed it. My mom was very generous and always made sure that I was in some type of class. And when I graduated from high school, I just wanted to be an actress. That's all I wanted to do. So I moved to Los Angeles to pursue it. And I went to the Young Actors Space. It's in Van Nuys, and it's kind of a little popular school out there. It's kind of private. Everything was off the cuff. Like, nothing was, like, traditionally going through, like, college or anything, because I couldn't work and support myself and go to school at the same time. Because, like, from the moment I was 17, I was on my own.
Wow.
So I just always had to support myself and do my own thing. And so, like, I just wanted to be an actress so bad. So, like, I was doing the whole waitressing thing, going to the Young Actor Space and doing that. But I was doing it to try to pursue it professionally, like, get an agent and everything. And finally, I got an agent. And finally, I got my Screen Actors Guild and did some commercials and stuff. And then I'm like, oh, I think I want to get married.
Wow.
So, like, my whole focus in life kind of changed at that point. Like, I was 21 and I was like, okay, my priorities changed. And that's kind of how that happened. And then I didn't end up getting married till I was like 28. But during that whole time, it was kind of like a shift, you know, like, I ended up working at the Walt Disney Studios for a while. I was a executive assistant to one of the creative directors, one of us to Home Entertainment. That was a really wonderful experience because I had this opportunity to, like, kind of see what happened behind the scenes, like the auditions and how they cast people and how they put together their graphic art and manipulated, you know, the illustrations that come from the main movies and how they, like, marketed everything. And it was just really incredible, like, a wonderful experience. And I worked with some amazing people. And then, like I said, it's like, it was time. I need to grow up now.
Oh, at that time, you weren't pursuing the acting anymore. When you were working at Disney, you was like, okay, that's done. Moving on to other things already at that point.
Correct, yes. And then once I got married, I was still kind of doing, like, community theater here and there. And just, like, because I still had that creative bug in me. Like, there's just, I can't get rid of it. It's just a part of who I am, you know, and I get really bored really fast. I ended up taking over acting classes for one of the community members that was, she was part owner of one of the community theaters out in Fontana, and she was retiring. And so she asked me to take over her acting classes. And then I started doing that. And then, like I said, then I got the job at the Christian Arts and Theater, and I became their educational advisor, and then just kind of grew from there.
Well, what does it mean, educational advisor?
Well, it's a nonprofit organization, and they do, it's kind of like an after-school program where, like, they put on shows, but part of their curriculum is that you have to take classes in order to participate in the shows. So they have, like, the curriculum part where you have your teachers teaching acting classes on it, or whatever. It could be music, it could be dance, like, it could be stage development.
Right.
All of those different areas of the theater. They even have costuming and makeup design. And as an educational advisor, I was over the teachers. So, like, I made sure that their curriculum was aligned with what that they wanted to be taught, and that everything was copacetic, you know, and that we were meeting guidelines and things like that. And then as soon as they were finished with the classes, then they would do the big plays that they put on, like, quarterly. So then the kids were eligible to perform in the shows.
And when you were trained, is all acting training the same, or is it different if it's for film and camera versus on stage?
No, it's very different. Theater acting and movie acting, television acting is just, it's different. For example, when you're on stage, you have to be big. You have to be able to make sure that the person at the very back of the room can not only hear you and see you, but understand you.
Yes.
And then when it comes to acting for film and television, you've got a camera in your face and your space is very limited. So a lot of the acting is internal rather than external. So, like, there's different methods of learning the art. It's just a very different perspective. Like, sometimes it's more like, think of it like a clown is very big. A dancer is very physical. So they do everything very big and physical and dancing and, like, using the entire stage and, like, expressions are huge, and, like, it's like Disneyland. Like, the minute you audition for Disneyland, you have to be smiling, because if you're not smiling the entire time, you won't make the audition. Like, that's kind of like a secret. It's kind of like that with theater. You have to just be bigger than life. But with acting for commercials, stage, and film, I mean, for film, it's just so much more intimate. Everything has to be, like, internalized, and intention has to come through your eyes and your facial expressions without being too big and obnoxious.
Wow.
It's just a different method of teaching.
Yeah. Were you looking to go in either direction, or you had your preference for theater versus film when you originally set out?
Well, when I originally set out, I was dancing and singing and loved musical theater. So definitely musical theater kind of lends itself to stage.
Yeah.
But when I graduated from high school, I really wanted to do it professionally in Los Angeles. And so I wanted to do film and television and try to get on a TV show. And I just saw myself as like, you know, the girl next door kind of look. And I just wanted to be like, you know, in one of those TV shows and make some money, you know?
Yeah.
I did a couple episodes as an extra in Boy Meets World, and I was like so hoping things would work out, but you know, it's hard. It's just a really hard industry to break into. So
yes. And you hadn't taken any writing classes before that. That was just that it came out of, well, you know, I've been on the stage, I know how these stories work, so I'm gonna try to write my own and see how that goes. Or you were starting to look at writing at that point?
Well, in 2000, I actually did take a writing course with the Children's Institute of Literature. Like, it was a correspondence course.
Yeah.
Because I was intrigued by, I was like, I can write children's stories, you know. It's actually a lot harder than people think, but
yeah.
I was like, I can do this, you know, I have a great imagination. And so, like, I did the course, and I actually came up with my Rose Made a Laden idea back then in 2000. And I was like, you know, maybe I'll write this. But I was also trying to write musicals at the time. Like, I have a lot of unfinished plays, like big plays that I started writing that I never really finished them, and found that like the short plays kind of work for me. The little 10-minute plays are a lot better.
Yeah.
Plus, I do much better under pressure. Like, if I'm in a class and I know I have 10 kids and I've got 5 that are really strong and 5 that are kind of weak, I always wrote and I tailored my plays for my kids. So, like, everyone had a part. Everybody was included. But, like, I could challenge the bigger ones with big monologues. And, like, the little ones were, like, I would just give them bit parts where it was easy for them. Because they're still getting used to being on stage and in front of people. Because the minute, you know, being in stage and being in front of people can be nerve-wracking. Especially for little kids. Like, a lot of them want to freeze, you know.
Yeah.
Like, don't know what to do with themselves. So, I would always tailor my plays for them, based on their abilities. And so Under Pressure really helped me to develop the stories, and I would just like kind of do that. And so I find it's funny because like when I try to do it on my own without a class, like I just kind of like, ugh, it takes me forever to come up with an idea. But like, you give me kids, you give me a deadline, I'm done. It's like
Which is
so opposite for a lot of people, but it works for me. I don't know.
And most of these plays are they kind of like more of like a vignette of like just like a slice out of life sort of thing, or what sort of, was there any specific direction you would go in, or you just kind of made it up as you went along?
Oh, no. I usually use the source. Like, I have a lot of fairy tales that I've written, which is kind of like has in common with you. It's like I rewrote, like I did one called The Case of the Big Bad Wolf, which is actually my most popular story. It's about like the Big Bad Wolf goes on trial for trying to eat Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh!
and like, of course, the Queen of Hearts is the judge. And then you've got like the Mad Hatter and like the White Rabbit as the prosecuting and defense attorneys, and it's just like mayhem and craziness, and you've got Pinocchio in there, and you've got like all these like crazy little fairy tale kingdom characters, and in this as witnesses you've got the Three Little Pigs, and you've got like, so like that's like one story. And then I had another one where I did nursery rhyme characters or having a competition, so you've got like all the little like
Humpty Dumpty?
I have Humpty Dumpty, and I have jokes about him being an egg and falling. And I've got, like, jokes about a little boy blue, you know, can blow your horn. Like, those kinds of, like, Mary had a little lamb. Yeah. And, like, those little things are all part of that. And those are my two favorite of all the plays that I've written, because, like, they're just hilarious. Like,
yeah, they sound like fun.
Totally. Yeah. And then I have like some that are like aliens coming to like a old folks home trying to steal the old people. And like, just have silly little like plays that some of them are like, I have one about Cinderella and where the prince turns into a mouse because her shoes are magical. You know?
Oh, very nice.
I just take them in like weird directions, you know, just for the kids so that they could have fun doing it.
Yeah, for sure. And like, if you're adding in humor, are you balancing between the kids and between the adults that are going to be watching, that you want to throw out a line to them?
You know, here's the thing with my plays. They're all clean. All the topics are clean. I don't ever use like foul language in them, or like, there's no question about it. So like, a little kid can watch it and so can adults. So I always just kind of, the humor is just fun. You know, it's just fun, yeah, and clean and delightful. Like, it's not, it doesn't tear anybody down. Like, you or might suggestive. Have a bad guy, but even then it's just silly. You know?
Yeah. That's what we have in common with Oh My Word. You keep it clean. Hooray. And then what's the book series that you keep mentioning? So what is that audience for that? And what are the books about?
Rosemaid Alaydin. It is it's a fairy tale. It's a new fairy tale. It is a new character. When I was working at Disney, in 2000, when I was taking that writer's course, I just came up with an idea for kind of like a princess, but she's not a princess. That's the whole point. She doesn't right. want to be a princess. And so my whole series is about her and her adventures, because of course a prince falls in love with her and then she's going to become the princess, but she is not okay with that. Yeah. So she's just a simple seamstress. Like, that's her career. Like, she and her mother sew in order to make ends meet. She has two brothers. They worked with the prince. It's basically about, as a young woman, understanding yourself, finding the courage to be who you are, not feel that you have to buckle under pressure because everybody has expectations of you. And it's just about, it's kind of a coming of age type of story where she just is coming to find out who she is and what she stands for and who she wants to be.
Oh, so is that young adult or middle grade that it's aimed for?
Well, that's the thing. Like, when I started it, I thought it was middle grade. But when I've been working with these critique groups, and because my character is 17, kind of being pushed into the YA area. But I still think, like I said, I write for all ages. Like, she could be read by a 9-year-old and they would love it. In fact, they do love it. Like, okay. I get reviews from 9-year-olds and I get reviews from 18-year-olds who like it. So
that's good. Yeah. Well, you could already tell that it's a new fairy tale because you said her mom's in it. So we know usually fairy tales, the first thing they do is take the mom out. Like, yes, it is different. There is a mother figure here.
Well, yeah, her dad dies, of course. And well, I don't even bring him into it because it's just really, she's raised by her mom with her two brothers. And she has a best friend who's the beauty. She's the beautiful girl. And she is just kind of like a normal person. Like, she's got red hair and freckles and she's not gorgeous. In fact, when I did the cover of the book, I wanted to make sure she didn't look like those perfect, you know, princesses. She needed to look like a real person. So,
one second. Redhead and freckles. I think that looks like a very normal person. I'm totally biased toward redheads and freckles.
Well, I just love redheads. And I just, you know, I always wished I was auburn instead of blonde. It's just how it is. So. She's kind of got a little brave in her. It's a little bit of the brave story, but not really, because you know how she doesn't want to get married and she doesn't want to fit in what her mother expects her to be. But in my story, the mother, she doesn't take like a huge role in like that. She's taught her how to be herself and to love herself. And it just shows that she has more pressure from the queen. My queen is my bad guy in the story. Well, originally, there's this whole arc. Like, I'm on book 3 and like,
oh wow,
she really grows by book 3.
And these ones you said are also self-published, or they're published through somebody else?
No, the first book is, I went with a publishing, like a self-publishing company, which, to be honest, was a huge mistake. I wish I had never done that. But because you end up, like, I paid for the art, which was so much more expensive. If I had done it myself, it would have been a lot cheaper. But you have to learn, you know, sometimes you just have to learn by making mistakes. Although I love it. I think that I love the story. And I think that the cover turned out really nice. But I'm going to be self-publishing the second one. Like, I'm almost done with the second one. Like, I have the cover made and I have it, like, I'm still working on some of the chapters, filling it out, making it a little thicker, because my first book is very small. It's like almost like a novella size.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not big enough to really be considered a YA book. It's more like a short story with like 18,000 words.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
Which I didn't even know, like, when I first started, like, I didn't understand any of that. Like, I wish I had, but that was back in 2016. And then since I've joined SCWI, like, that's just made such a big difference.
Do you contract a freelance editor then to look over your work? you have to start like putting together a team for all these things, or how does that work? Or you just have some people that you trust to kind of give it a glance?
Right. Well, with the first book, I had my husband, who is my personal editor.
Yeah.
And since then, I've learned that I need to kind of like venture out more. So yes, I hire people to look it over for me and do like a professional edit and just make sure it's not just about the grammar or the line editing.
Right.
It's more about the content and fluidity and making sure that everything is consistent and cohesive and that, you know, I don't have any gaps in the story.
Yes, absolutely.
That I've answered all of the questions that needed to be answered. And with this second book, like I have critique groups that have helped me so much. And it's just, it's made a huge difference because having other authors read your stories helps you understand, because sometimes you have a weakness and they have a strength, or you have a strength where they have a weakness, and you guys can help one another. And it just has been like a huge light bulb for me. And it's just been a wonderful experience. And I can't even say enough about SCBWI and how much it's just blessed my life. You know, it's just
amazing.
I mean, I'm a kind of like a self-learner. So like I listen to courses and I read books and I like try to learn as much as I possibly can. But sometimes you just have to talk to another person in order to understand what you're not grasping, you know?
Yeah. You see someone to pull you out of your own head to look at it from the bird's eye view with them almost. And then you're like, oh, now I see. No, okay. Yes, I was a little bit too much in the story to see what had to be fixed there or something. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but I think that because playwriting has helped me with the dialogue aspect, that I don't have a problem with the dialogue or even progressing the story forward with the dialogue. It's just for me filling in all the external stuff, like the environment and describing everything. That was a real challenge for me, like the fluff. Yeah.
You just partially preempted my question, because I was going to ask, how has being trained and actually being on stage helped you with your writing? Because especially when you were speaking about, I was thinking about it when you were speaking about the difference between theater and film, that one's more external versus internal and things like that. Has that affected, have you drawn on that when you are developing characters or writing stories? That's novels and not for the stage. Yeah.
So much, Esther, you have no idea. I will act out a scene in my head. And then when it comes down to writing the emotional aspect of my character, I will act it out physically. Like I'll look at myself in a mirror sometimes so that I can get the right expressions, and then I'll know how to describe it, you know, and to be able to put myself in a reaction state, like with my characters, so that it's more realistic. I'm definitely able to go into their heads, not just my character's head, but also the other characters, like not just the protagonist. Like I feel the emotions of my bad guys, and like kind of like, it just really helps. It helps so much. Like I see a movie going on in my head, and I can be all the different characters that need to be on the paper. So it's just the translation part for me that's getting it all down, which is the hardest part, I think.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because there is the level of being able to know how each character would behave, and then also being able to actually write that out so that each character is distinctive, but then actually having the words to say, you know, and describe how they're being. It's almost like doing a self-portrait almost. Like you're looking at yourself, you're seeing how, what your reaction is, and you have to be able to describe that somehow in words.
And it's not that easy. Yeah, it can be difficult.
Yeah, especially because if it makes sense in your own mind and then you have to find words for it, you're like, I don't know, look. Just see the picture and look.
Well, there's also wonderful books I've been introduced to. Like there's Emotion, like the Thesaurus. I don't know if you know about that book, but like you can go in and it'll say, okay, well, I'm feeling like my character's angry. So like I need to know, like, give me some variety in angry expressions, you know, and like it'll have like words that will help describe it. And I love that. Emotion Thesaurus. It's like an encyclopedia for emotional words.
No, I've never heard of that. See how productive we're being right now, sharing valuable information. So because we're going to keep our timing perfect, we're going to wrap up with the fill in the blank of, I love it when, whichever one you want to use, of books, editors, writers, agents, whatever. You can even do actors and directors or plays if you want to fill in there. I love it when they do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. So how would you fill in the blank for those ones?
Okay, so I love it when a story goes to the heart. Not only is it funny, but that it also like fills in like the heart of the matter. Like with Harry Potter books, okay. Might as well go to Harry Potter because I love Harry. We all love our fantasy books. J.K. Rowling did such a great job drawing us into Harry Potter's character. We feel so sorry for him right at the beginning, right? Because his whole life sucks. He lives in a cabinet, right?
Yeah.
But then she turns the story around to where he's this hero. He's able to grow into this magnificent magician, right? We get to enjoy this journey with him. And I love how, and you know, writers can do that. And I just think that is such a talent. And I want to be able to do something like that. I want to be able to like draw in my readers so that they just want to keep going with this character, or like they just fall in love with this character and they want to keep experiencing what their life is like, you know?
Yeah.
So she's a wonderful example. I love Steven Spielberg. I love his way of his imagination and his intuitiveness when it comes to making films. And like, he's just, I'm in awe of his talent. I love actors that are positive role models. Not only are they just good actors, but they're good people. You know, yeah. Tom Hanks, from what I know of him, is he's just a really great guy. And like, he's nice and he treats his people nice. And he's never been known as like a drama king. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that about certain actors. It makes me sad when other actors do that. They take advantage of their
like status or celebrity. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or their fans, and they think they're bigger than life. Like I just saw this meme. Like it was a picture of Clint Eastwood pumping his own gas, and people are like, that's a real guy. That's a real man. And he was like, yeah, well, he didn't have like an assistant doing it for him. You know, like he could totally have somebody else driving him around where he's driving his own car. And,
yeah,
I mean, during this whole pandemic, we've been able to see kind of the humanity of some of these superstars, and some of it is good and some of it's not, you know, some of it you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as a mother, I've kind of pulled back a lot from the whole like Hollywood scene, and I just don't really follow it as much, just because like I'm more in tune with what I want my kids to be exposed to. So we don't even have cable.
Well, I think most people,
we do the whole Netflix thing, but it's like, I like it because then I can choose and we can like decide what is better, what we really want to see, what we don't want to see. And I like that.
Just a quick question. Well, I know we're supposed to be wrapping up, but I just thought of this quickly. How do you get the word out there about your book? Do you just tell people you've written a book, or have you tried different kind of, is there anything that you've ever tried to just either ad-wise or anything like that to get yourself out there? Or is it just word of mouth, talking to people you know?
Well, in the beginning, I was like terrible with the whole marketing thing. Just like had no idea what I was doing. But now it's kind of funny, like with the 10-minute play book series, it is doing fantastic. In fact, it's doing fantastic in the Middle East.
What?
Yeah, and it's actually been translated into Farsi, which I thought was kind of weird, but like it is doing so well in other countries outside of the United States. It's just, I don't know if it's because it's helping people learn English, could be doing that, and they're using it because of the play form, but it's just a positive book of plays, and I think that people like that, and then it's also introducing them to our culture in a positive way, so.
Cool.
Yeah, so I've been blessed. And I, you know, I didn't do a lot, but I do the ads. Like, I'll do the Facebook ads, and sometimes I see, like, my sales go up because of it.
Very good.
But, like, it's kind of funny. Like, I never expected those books to go anywhere. But I find that a lot of schools like my books, too, because I don't charge royalties for them or licensing fees.
Right.
So if it's a nonprofit, like if it's profit, then yes, they have to pay a fee. But for nonprofit, like schools and elementary schools and junior highs, they love to do my plays, and they'll send me stuff, and like they'll send me like pictures of the kids and their outfits are on stage. And
that's really, really great. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you, Carly. Thank you so much for speaking with me and for being on my podcast today. It's been a treat to speak with you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word podcast featuring author Carlene Griffith. To find out more about Carlene and her work, please check out the link in the episode notes. To find out more about Oh My Word podcast and all the great stuff we're up to, please follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word podcast or check us out at eltenenbaum.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Catch you next time.